This week on Art in the Air features designer, illustrator, we had Ariana Koulouridis sharing her own line of original children's books. Next, jazz and R&B vibraphonist, percussionist, and music educator, Dekobe Berry, sharing his more than 25 years of concert experiences. Our spotlights on Carol S.'s new book, Dear Children, Remembrance and Gleanings of a Father, a deeply personal collection of her great-grandfather's prolific writings.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight. She's been with us many times before, Carol Estes, photographer, but now in this mode, she's going to be the author and editor of a wonderful book that's actually very personal to him, kind of a historical perspective of her grandfather and everything. And it's coming out in paperback, and it's a large volume of the collection of works. Carol, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be and happy to see everybody and hear everybody again.
Yeah, congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It was quite the effort, and it was actually my great grandfather, and he actually was he immigrated from Wales when he was 14. They took a steamer to Boston. And when they hit American soil, the flags were at half staff because President Garfield had just been shot.
Oh my God.
So that was my great grandfather's first day in America. Wow. In 1881.
So this is really a family history. So tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, what brought you to decide to go ahead and it's mostly an editing job, pulling this together, where the resource was, and tell us about that process.
Well, it kind of started from my father's World War II footlocker, because all of this came in the 1970s in a big box from my grandmother, who kept all of this. Dad put it in his World War II footlocker, which was kind of off. It wasn't really for us to be able to go through. When my father passed away, we pulled it up. I was writing eulogy, and all of this surfaced, and all the memories of kind of remembering seeing it when I was a teenager, and it kind of reminded me that I had one time looking at some of the poems. I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be nice to be able to keep this for others? And so after my mom passed away, all of the stuff kind of was sorting through the house, and I could kind of convince my sister to trust me with the information. And so I started putting everything together and just kind of compiling and editing and sorting and being astounded of somebody who had only had education to age 14 to be able to write and put together what he did.
Boy, isn't it funny that you are also a poet and a writer even before compiling that? It's really been a familial practice. Do you have any pre-knowledge of his writings before he came to America?
Oh, gosh. I never met him because he died in 1945.
Sure. No, I mean,
we saw it just a little bit when I arrived from California, but we had just minutes to look at it. My father put it away, and we really never had any connection to it. So it just, it stayed in the back of my mind. And then, and when it surfaced again, kind of went through it. And I understand, I kind of was connecting those dots between my writing and going through all this. And so I think I would just thank him for maybe passing the gene and just the excitement of what words can do.
It's such a historical, like an absolute historical treasure to have a first person account of all of this history.
Yes, because most of this, right, most of the writings were through contemporaneous through the 1930s. So he was living, they went from the mines from Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Missouri, where he met my great grandmother and said, voila, here I am. And, but health from the mines pushed him to end up in San Francisco. And so he spent all his last decades in San Francisco reminiscing and talking about being a good citizen and being a good person and faith and family. And it was just amazing to see what he was able to put together and leave us for reflection.
How long did it take you to do the compiling and editing and everything? That's got to be a huge process.
Oh, it was a huge process. And I know that before the pandemic, I was doing a little bit genealogy, and so I could go back and have as much information and facts about his naturalization and all that kind of thing for the documents, anything I could find to back up of all of the things he has put in. And then my sister and I took a trip to Wyoming because we knew that my grandmother had buried two daughters in 1918 and 1919 in the first flu pandemic. And we knew that there was connection because my great-grandfather was living in the area in Colorado at the time. So I wanted to include the headstone in the book. So that's kind of what started it all. So here we are, all these, it's been almost a decade, I'm sure, for the labor of love. Totally.
Well, I hope this is a quick question. Was all the paper intact or had it degraded very much?
Oh gosh, no! Everything, almost everything, was hand typed, and then every letter was "Dear Children," mm-hmm. and it was amazing, and the quality and that was lasted forever. So,
well, in our final moments here, how can they find your book? Where can they locate it and purchase it, and either online and everything, and also tell us your website and how people can reach out to you.
The title of the book is Dear Children, Reminiscences and Gleanings of a Father, and it's available on Amazon. And my website is welcometocareworld.com, and you can find me and find out any other information, and hopefully I'm going to update the blog.
Excellent. That's Dear Children, Reminiscences and Gleanings of a Father, and it's compiled by Carol Estes. Thank you so much for coming on the Air Spotlight and sharing this whole journey.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Carol.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Ember Forge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Bethy Lovelight, and I'm a star rockin' musician, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Ariana Koulterides to Art on the Air. Ari is originally from Indiana and graduated from the American Academy of Art in Chicago. She now works as a freelancer specializing in playful children's book illustrations with whimsical characters and animals. Her books, to date are Bed Tales, Shirt Tales, Toilet Tales, and the most recent, Llamas with Lemonade, an unusual animal ABC. She enjoys creating art for children's books, logos, ads, and commissions. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Ari. Very nice meeting you.
Hello. Thank you so much. And wonderful to meet you, too.
And Ari, I remember seeing you around, though you were never in theater, I don't recall, but hanging around the theater, I remember you and I can't remember what her name is. You were sometimes sitting, holding up the wall. And I was like, hey, you guys keep holding that wall up so it doesn't fall down. I remember doing that. So
I was seeing Lisa, my best friend, Lisa.
And right,
my
Lisa.
Husband, Ivan. Yes, yeah. I'm still very close, obviously, with everyone from my close friends from high school.
Well, we want to start off, Ari, with this interview about your background. I call it your origin story. And you can tell our audience how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Ari.
Sure. So is high school a good place to start? Is that good?
We'd like to start earlier.
Let's go earlier. How early do you remember?
Itty bitty Ari. Yeah. Well, ever since I was little, I always loved drawing. And it's so funny because my mom has actually kept like all of my old artwork and drawings and doodles and scribbles and projects and everything. And, you know, it's always fun to look back at as a reminder, where I came from. And, I always loved illustrating. It was always a dream to illustrate children's books. I grew up, you know, with a love for children's books. And in school, I always took art club, all the art classes that were possible. Leading up to, I guess I'll get to high school. That's when I started to take art even more seriously and kind of saw it as like an actual, you know, career goal. You know, it was always a dream, but I was trying to, you know, do well in school and still keep up with like my passions as well. So throughout school, I took all of the art classes again that were available. I took ceramics. I took all the painting classes, drawing classes. I took AP Art Studio. I took AP Art History. I love art history as well. You know, visiting museums growing up and just everything. Very, very artsy. Mm-hmm. And again, I actually met my husband in elementary school and started dating in high school, also an artist as well. After high school, we actually both went to the American Academy of Art, where I studied illustration. I, again, tried to take jam-pack as much art classes and courses as I could, learned so much from my professors. I took, painting, life drawing, graphic design, printmaking, everything. I tried to stay as long as I could after school and partake in the different clubs that were available, oil painting. Then eventually I started working at my school as well. I was working in the library and it was really cool because at the American Academy of Art, everything was, based around art. So even like our core classes, like our science classes were like anatomy classes. Mm. Everything was like revolved around art. And even like the library was very art, like history focused and had a lot of art books and everything. So I loved it. I basically like lived at my school. It was like train, school, work, train back home.
so going back to those childhood drawings, were you drawing whimsical then, or did you have a realistic period then as you went into the academy?
So when I was little, I always loved drawing animals. Mm-hmm. So animals were like my main focus. And then I started to love drawing people and figures as well. So then in school, I started practicing even more. And that's when I did start working on life drawing and realism as well. But I studied, very fine art based, like very traditional art. So I did get into a lot of realism, and actually to this day, I love doing very whimsical and, very realistic realism artwork as well. So I like to have a blend. I'd say I'm really versatile. I could do something very stylized, but I also really enjoy, the practice of, traditional art and realism as well.
So on your website, do you have examples of all of that?
Yeah, I do. Actually, on my website, I have different categories. So I have my illustration, which features a lot of commissions and work that I've done for different clients, and my books. And then I also have a category that's sculpture, because I also love and have a really deep passion for sculpture. And then I have paintings as well, because I love doing like traditional oil paints and watercolors as well. I love digital painting. I like to blend the two arts as well. Traditional, like where I'll do like a hand drawing or a charcoal drawing, and then maybe I'll add layers of color digitally. So I like to kind of blend like everything. I'll do touches of realism in certain areas, but it's kind of like stylize it in a way that's very artful. Just kind of mixing everything together. But I would say a lot of my work is still nature inspired. So I love like plants and animals and the figure. So that's kind of my personal passion and kind of like field that I like to focus on.
We noticed part of some of the thing you have outfits for your puppies, it looks like, and where they have like on your website. And
yes.
So tell us about some of the things you do. You do home decor, product design, other, besides, we'll talk about your children's book down the road, but some of the other things of your actual, you know, work.
Yes. So luckily, after studying at the American Academy of Art, I was really grateful to graduate as the valedictorian of my graduating class, which was really helpful when looking for art careers and like, you know, different jobs within the art field, because it is so incredibly competitive. Yeah. And, you know, that it was very difficult to, you know, find full-time work that had a nice blend of, you know, office and, you know, creative work. So soon after graduating, I took an internship at the Radford Exchange, where I worked with the holiday team. And the Radford Exchange, if you're not familiar, is a company that does all home decor and collectibles, and a lot of giftware. They work with major licenses like Disney, Warner Brothers, a lot of licenses like Elvis as well, The Precious Moments, all kinds of different affinities. And Disney was the main one that I worked with very closely. But after my internship, I started working there full time. And then shortly after, Ivan, my husband, actually started working at the company as well, but on a different division. I worked for Holiday. He worked for Coins. And we really enjoyed it. It was really fun to do, you know, product development and product design, where, you know, we'd work on concepting art and different products and bring it to life. So I worked there about like almost 6 years. And then I was trying to find something that was in a similar field. I loved what I did, but I wanted something that was even more closely related to my personal passion and kind of bring back that nature into my work. And I discovered an opportunity with Michael Aram. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but he is an artist himself and designer. And he's well known for his nature-inspired work. So he does all sculpture and home decor pieces that are all luxury home decor and jewelry. Mm-hmm. So I recently, my husband and I moved and relocated from Chicago to Florida. And now I work there full time. So I'm designing all luxury home decor and jewelry. And it's really, really fun. It's like my dream job. I love my team. And, you know, it's just wonderful to be able to like, you know, work with my passion every day and just like concept different ideas and work with the design team and product development. And it's really, really been fun.
Florida, are you in?
West Palm Beach.
Oh, nice.
So describe for our audience what you have in the home decor field. Like what type of items would you see?
So like what type of products?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you design?
Sure. So we do a lot of, we do holiday decor. So you'll see like ornaments and tabletop. But the main core pieces are tabletop pieces such as anything, you know, dinnerware. You know, there's serving bowls, little nut bowls, there's vases, there's photo frames, you know, all kind, anything in the home, you know, even furniture, like, you know, small end tables, all kinds of different home decor pieces that are really beautiful and very artful, luxurious pieces. Like they're a piece of art themselves, but they're functional. So it's really fun.
Yeah, nice. And I see on your website, you know, some of the examples of that you can see, like plates that have little animal characters on them, and candles and mugs and things like that.
That is so fun. Those are actually pieces I did right before I started working with Michael Aram. And those were different concepts that I had worked on for for a full collection of dinnerware that was all nature inspired. So I think I did them for plates. I did mugs and candles. So very closely aligns with what I'm doing now for full time as well.
Are they still available?
Those are actually renders that I did. I did find a vendor that I think was in Germany that had a beautiful quality. So I have samples. I have a physical sample, two different finishes. But I didn't go forward with actual production on those at this time. But maybe in the future I have to see what what I have in store. But yeah, working at Michael Aram, it's been a wonderful experience. I've been there almost a year and a half now. And it's been really, really fun, just whether it's a sculpture, decorative sculpture, a decorative object, or, a functional piece. It's always fun to
innovate. Are you designing those objects, and are they ceramic? What are they made out of?
The collaboration. So Michael Aram, designs the products, and I, heavily help with any inspiration and concepting, and, bounces ideas back and forth, and it's a wonderful team to work with.
Right, especially the Peanuts glitter globe with Snoopy sitting on top. That looks pretty exciting. Yeah.
That's a Bradford product that was really fun to do for Valentine's Day. So everything I did back at Bradford was all holiday inspired and focused. So I did a lot of Christmas decor, a lot of ornaments, glitter globes, anything holiday.
Oh, yeah. And I see the Harry Potter illuminated glitter globe. A lot of fun things there.
So what type of commissions are you getting aside from your job? Do you get a steady flow of commissions?
So for freelance, you're talking about
freelancing. Yes.
Yeah, I'll do a lot of portraits. I'll do a lot of animal portraits, pet portraits, figures. People will reach out. So my husband and I for wedding invitations, we actually just recently did some wedding invitations, where we did the full package, the RSVP, the actual invite, the thank yous. So it kind of like I said, we're actually both really versatile. So we'll, really open to whatever people reach out to us with. We've also done a lot of markets where we'll sell our artwork, our personal art, at, different kind of festivals or markets or conventions. And that's always been really fun too. So we're trying to find some new ones here out in Florida that, that are really nice. And we found some that we were kind of scoping them out and, excited to find what other opportunities we can find here.
Any opportunities to do public art like murals or?
So I actually have not, I've done one mural with my husband actually for a friend who also went to the Munster High School. But that was back in Chicago. Over here, my husband actually does a little bit more with public art. He's more interested in murals. I usually work smaller scale. Mm-hmm. So murals are a little bit more daunting to me because of the large scale. I usually work small. I can, with digital pieces, I'll do it. I can make it large because I can work really tiny and then upscale it and keep the resolution high. But I feel like books are kind of my canvas. I like a smaller surface area.
Well, before we get into your books, I wanted to ask about product photography. Are you doing that also?
Product photography, I do have a category on my site, and that's mostly for collaborations that I've done with, there's actually a brand called Bone Filu who does luxury dog treats and dog toys. And they're really, really fun because they'll send, different treat boxes or some of their new products. And then our little chihuahuas will get to enjoy them. And, I'll try to capture little videos and moments of that. But that's always fun for them.
Well, I think we want to move on to what we actually first contacted you about is your books. So you have a series of children's books that you both write and illustrate. So tell us about first, what got you into that, and tell us about them.
Sure. So when I was at the American Academy of Arts, I started doing these little pig doodles, and I called him Pip the Pig, and I just made this little piglet doing like all these random things. Like he would, it would be like Pip the Pig paints a painting, and I kind of like would do little alliterations with them. And it was just kind of like a fun hobby. I'd like post them on like Instagram or Facebook, whatever. And I post a lot of my artwork. I'm always like posting my art online. And a publishing company reached out to me about illustrating for another writer's trilogy of books. So I worked closely with them on my first three books, those the different tales, the Shirt Tales, Toilet Tales, and Bed Tales. With somebody else, actually had done all the writing. It was a different author. And then I did the illustrations. And those were so fun. That was the first like big children's book I did that wasn't like a local like commission for someone. That was actually through a publishing company. And I loved working with the company. The publishing company was amazing. The publisher is so, you know, incredible. They've taught me so much. And they were very, you know, accommodating and just a wonderful team to work with. Then while I was in school, I actually designed a nursery poster that was all animals for an animal alphabet. And I was going to sell it on my, or I did sell copies on my Etsy shop. And I was like, what else could I do with this? Because I spent so much time, you know, A to Z drawing all of these little critters. I was trying to figure out like how I could repurpose the artwork. And I took a typography class at the American Academy of Art where we had a project where we had to do a booklet about one typeface and every font within that typeface. Oh. And, you know, for example, like it was Times New Roman and then, you know, standard, you know, italics, bold, like all of that kind of stuff, basically in that one typeface. So we had to do a whole book, and a lot of people did like lyrics to their favorite song or like, you know, an excerpt from a favorite book. But I wanted to do something that was like very my own and just something very fun and kind of out there. So I did a whole alphabet book using my poster. So I took my nursery poster that I was selling on Etsy and like translated it into an alphabet book. And part of the project at this, at our school, we like did the like the binding of the book. We like self-bound it or whatever and everything. And it was like stapled, very like handmade, you know. And I would start, you know, taking those to the fairs and all of the markets and things that my husband and I would sell our artwork at. And, you know, they were like really fun because within my book, I it was an animal alphabet and they were unique animals and they were all real animals. So for like example, instead of a unicorn for you, which you see in a lot of books, I chose an urchin. So it's like this little squishy sea urchin. And so every animal is real. They're like kind of like not all of them, but most of them are like quirky animals, not your everyday alphabet book animal. And I kind of blended them together. And it was, you know, really fun. And the publisher that I worked with on those other three books was really interested in actually publishing this book. So I worked closely with the design team and we, you know, worked back and forth with each other on like color editing. And we used a different typeface than what I had done in my school project. And yeah, we turned it into an actual board book for kids. And it's now available on their site and also Barnes & Noble and Target and Amazon and Walmart. And then also recently, it's also available at The Breakers here in West Palm Beach in stores. So it's very exciting and fun. And yeah, really, you know, one of my favorite projects that I've worked on.
So what's on the drawing board for, what's on the drawing board right now?
I guess I can give a little sneak peek too. After I had done that book, I was, you know, really happy with the results and, you know, they were really excited about the success of the book and were open to doing like a companion book. So I just finished a brand new book that sort of, it could stand alone, but it's also like a beautiful companion book to Llamas with Lemonade, an unusual animal, ABC. And it's actually very similar in the elements where it's like different animals, you know, very unique. But instead of focusing on the alphabet, the main focus and theme is size. So this book is called Platypus and Puggle. and animals big and small. So I'm really excited, and I'm, you know, definitely will share it with you guys once it's available. It'll be published in the spring. So right now they're working on the reader's copies and, you know, all of the, you know, little tidbits, but wrapping that one up. And yeah, I'm really excited.
So exciting. Yes, it is exciting.
I see the one book is called Toilet Tales.
Yes, that was part of the trilogy of the first three books that I worked on. Super fun. Now, that one is actually my favorite of those three. That one was really funny. So adorable, all of the different animals.
So what do you like to do for fun outside of creating art and illustration?
Outside of arts and illustrating and sculpting and all of the artsy things, I would say I am a movie and food lover. Uh-huh. So if I could just sit and watch movies all day long while eating delicious food from like all over the world, that's like my favorite. I love like trying new restaurants, new cuisines, and then just like binge watching all my favorite movies and shows. That's like my favorite.
Very good. Well, we're getting about to our final minute here. I'm going to give you a chance to tell how people can find you on the web, how they can reach out to you, maybe if they want to reach out for a commission, and once again, remind them where they can get your books.
Sure. Thank you so much again for inviting me here. But yeah, you could find me on Instagram at Ari Styled. I also have a website. I'll share the link with you. It's my name. It's very long, but my books are available at Barnes & Noble, Target, and Amazon, Walmart. And yeah, I have a brand new book coming soon. Again, it's Platypus and Puggle, Animals Big and Small. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed this today. You know, I could talk on and on and on about art, but, you know, it was wonderful to reconnect also. You know, I haven't seen you since high school, so.
Long time ago.
I know. But it feels like yesterday, but, you know.
Not bad. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Air and sharing your art journey, your creative illustration, and the children's books. And again, when you go to our website, click on Ari's picture, and it will take you to her website. And so there will be a direct link there. We had Ariana Koulourides, and she's on here talking about her wonderful illustrations and everything. Like, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your art and creative journey.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It was really sweet.
Thank you.
This is Jessica Lynn, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Dacobi Berry to Art on the Air. Dacobi is a vibraphonist and percussionist with more than 25 years of experience in jazz, concert, R&B, and world genres. He began playing music at the young age of 8 and became one of the top musicians of his elementary, high school, and college ensembles. He performs across the country and around the world, many times as an honored guest musician. He is a dedicated educator, writer, and traveler, and strives to keep the art of jazz vibraphone alive. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Dacobi. It's very, very nice meeting you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, Dacobi, and I know you're part of the Billy Foster jazz event that was happening on September 20th. You were there and part of that whole expanded celebration. But what we want to know is about your origin story. And how I tee that up is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about your story.
Well, I started, as I said, started music very young, around 8. I had a very good band program in Harvey, Illinois. So I wanted to become a drummer because I saw either a cartoon or something or somebody playing drums. So I said, maybe I could do that. So I was told that, we wouldn't go to drums. I had to master the orchestra bells relative of the vibraphone. So I did that. And then when I got into junior high school, the middle school bands, I started, doing drums, did marching band, did jazz band, played drum set, and all that. But I kept my my mallet skills up to par, practicing my skills and everything. Then when it came around time for high school, my band director there needed a percussionist with mallet experience. I had the most of the time, when I was there. So I switched over. I saw that everybody else wanted to play drums. So I said, I'm not going to really compete with that, but I have an advantage if I stay with the vibraphone, so switched over, there I stayed. From there, college and, you know, sometimes going out to nightclubs and sometimes if they had a vibraphone or sometimes they had to borrow one, but I just fell into my own niche and ran with it.
It's not something you can stick in your pocket like a piccolo, right?
Unfortunately, no. And I'm thinking about maybe some future thing will happen. And there are some portable vibraphones, but it's still not where you can put it in your pocket unless you have an app or something.
So were you, so I was introduced to the vibraphone at a really young age because my folks had Arthur Lyman, you know, recordings, vinyl at home. So so how did you become aware of it? And were your parents musicians?
Well, actually, my mother, she's a bit of a musician. She wanted to play guitar, but, you know, she ended up playing a little bit of piano and singing. My father was the real musician. You know, he played bass guitar, bass clarinet. So I guess either innately or whatever, it's been in the family. How I, you know, first saw the vibraphone was actually, you know, when I started going to the Guinea Band full band rehearsal, saw the vibraphone, looked interesting, saw the pedal. I think it was a Yamaha. It's still there at Brooks Middle School today. I think now and again, you know, sometimes I might go there and show the students there how I've, you know, mastered it, or showing the people who are the students who are interested, you know, how you play it, how you play with two mallets, how you play with, you know, four mallets, and how, you know, how you can, you know, match chords along with guitar, piano, and everything like that. I try and keep, you know, that aspect alive, because for what many people don't know, the vibraphone is an Illinois instrument. It was created in Illinois. It's over a century years old. The place where it was born is still in existence at Century Mallet Instrument Company in the Ravenswood neighborhood in Chicago. And to my knowledge, it's probably one of the main places people send their vibraphones for repair and updates and everything like that.
You know, for our audience that may not know, tell them the difference between a vibraphone and some of the other mallet instruments that are out there.
So between the vibraphone, xylophone, and the marimba, those are like the main three, size, shape, sound, and material. So size of xylophones and marimbas, or marimbas tend to be a little bit bigger, have more octaves than a vibraphone. Xylophone's probably about the same size. The sound, so marimba's going to have like a more of a deeper, rich sound. Xylophone's going to have like a higher pitch. The shape. So for the keys, so on the marimba or xylophone, the flat keys, like you would see on the piano, like the black keys, they're on an elevated position. On a vibraphone, all the keys are on a level plane. And then, of course, material. Vibraphone, their keys are made of metal. Xylophones and marimbas, they tend to have like either a rosewood or sometimes an acrylic. And then, of course, the big tail is vibraphones have a damper pedal. Xylophones or marimbas don't.
And I remember my mom's vibraphone that they has a little motor there to get it, and they finding like the belt for it ended up being the thing because when the belt would break, we ended up using something like for a vacuum cleaner belt on it. So you get that vibrating sound.
Actually, they call it matriculation, but yeah, that's what gives the vibraphone its name, gives the vibrato. And you know, with ones with motors, you can, you know, change it up however speed. So the fastest you could go, we vibers call it the Johnny Lytle mode, where you have it as fast as you can go. And then when you want it slower, you know, maybe you want to take it to Milt Jackson's speed. So it doesn't have to be as fast as you want all the time.
Oh, that's funny. So I read that you have your own branded mallet. So how did that happen? So what did you need that then caused this whole new mallet to be created?
Well, because my original, when I started, originally I was a Mike Balter mallet person. So anything I got, I just got from Mike Balter because he was in Illinois. I even, you know, visited his shop. Then, you know, he would give out free mallets or rewind used up mallets. But then when he retired, and I believe what Vic Firth kind of bought out Mike Balter mallet, I wanted the essence of the Viper Home to be Illinois, because it's to me, that's one of our heritage, at least for the state of Illinois. And that's kind of one of my quests. I wanted to make the vibraphone the state instrument in Illinois because it has so much history. It is such a versatile instrument. So I did a quick search and I found a person, Brian Choppy Massimo Mallets. So it's like, okay, let me contact him. So I called him and asked him, like, you know, do you have a shop? Do I have a place I can come to and, you know, try your wares? He's like, no, I don't really have a shop or everything. I kind of do everything at home. But he sent me a pair of mallets. It was like a medium, mallets of like 230s, medium mallets. So I went ahead and tried them out. I liked them, and I gave a good one on social media. He liked my review so much that he sent me to try everything that he had in stock. So I did that. And then when I finally met at PASIC one November, I said, okay, this is what the design I want for my mallet. I want one with like a mushroom head and then two different types of cord. So he created that for me. He put my my stage name on it and the name of one of my instruments, Nightheart. And there we go. I pretty much became like a sponsored artist for Massimo Mallets.
Wonderful.
So does he sell your named mallets, you know, like as a brand, like now? He says, these are Jacoby Berry mallets.
Yeah, he does.
Excellent. Now you just have to get a vibraphone specifically named after you for a difference that you might design or something.
Yeah, I have to work on that because I think I know Musser's, they still make vibraphones. I think they're based out of Indiana right now. And then, of course, you have your One Vibe or your One Vibe out in the West Coast. And I like those okay. And then you have out in New Jersey with Stephen Lay for his what was it called? I forget the name of it. His Omega vibraphones. And a lot of them, I know with Stefan here, a lot of the big name vibraphones of the East Coast, you know, they kind of swear by them.
Right. Well, you know, I want our audience to maybe have a sample of your playing. I guess this was on a Carnival CD that you were with a band, and the song is Olive Oil. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll take a quick listen to that.
Well, I was at one of the venues, Cafe Prague. So it was kind of a Eastern European restaurant, and I was playing there. One of the guest artists, Peter Budd, he was impressed by my playing. He asked me to come and sit on this recording, you know, along with a vocalist and a couple others. So I said, sure. So we did a quick recording, and we made the CD called Carnival. So one of the instrumentals that he wrote was called Olive Oil, and I guess he featured me on this one.
Well, let's take a listen to it. Olive Oil on the Carnival CD with our guest today, Jacoby Berry. That was Dacoby Berry on Olive Oil on this Carnival CD where he was playing. And you're listening to him on Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM.
I love those vibes. So what is your day-to-day like now? What is practicing like? What is touring like? What are you doing right now?
Well, I'm also an educator, so I'm actually teaching at a special education school in Chicago Heights. But at the night, I'm pretty much almost all musician, whether it's practicing, because I actually have 3 vibraphones, so, you know, one for travel work, one for portability and practice, and then one for just general practice, display, everything like that. So I try to practice as much as I can. A lot of tunes, you know, I know I just have to kind of refresh myself. And then for me, because I guess I've gotten the reputation where sometimes I don't have to be the head instrument or main instrument like a saxophone or a horn player. They may want me to fill in for a guitar player playing chord work and everything, and that's fine as well, because I've kind of tried to practice on my four mallet technique, which is one of the, I like to argue, one of the most difficult things to do in the world of music.
And also to be a guest like that, you kind of have to fit in with the pace of whoever you're playing with. So that changes all the time. So I imagine you do have to really stay on top of that practicing.
Yes, and also have a good ear. And times where I can't pick up the mallet because, as has been noted, I can't put a vibraphone in my pocket. I mean, I do have like a little app where I can play a little bit, but for me, it's just listening constantly all the time, knowing my notes, knowing everything. So if I'm in an unfamiliar situation, I can try and use my ear if I can't read or there's no sheet music available.
Right.
But I try to be as versatile as possible.
So if someone comes to you and they say they want to learn that, would you think the path to learning that is maybe learning to play piano first? Because, you know, basically the vibraphone and the mallet type instruments is a piano, except you use mallets to hit it. Would you think that's an opening path? Or how would you recommend someone that wanting to learn it, maybe what step, learning to read music and be a piano before they move on to that?
Well, I've learned there are 2 paths. So there's the drum path. And actually, I kind of went through the drum path. And then there is the piano path. So piano, you can transition, you know, scales and everything easily to a vibraphone. And if you're brought up right to the drum path, like for me, I had to do orchestra bills, learn my scales and everything, and then, you know, learn my grips. You know, I can do rudiments and everything like that. It works either way. It's just a matter of dedication to the craft. Either path works. You know, it's just how you have to focus on your basics. So whether you're playing drums or starting piano, you know, learn your scales, learn your chords, constantly practice every day, and then when you transition to the vibraphone, whether it's from the orchestra bells or drums or from the piano, you have a good foundation, and really just practicing on the technique.
Now, you've played a lot in the region, I know, like at Paul Henry's and some of the other places. Tell us about some of the venues you've played. And also, you played with some groups, some of the people that we've had on our show, Joe Marciniak and a few others. But tell us about some of the groups you perform with. And, of course, you've been with Billy Foster. Tell us how you made that connection.
Well, I think I kind of – I've been traveling a lot of the venues. I mean, I've actually done a lot of – jazz jams like in Andes and Chicago and everything. And for me, because I play a vibraphone, I kind of what I kind of quote unquote crash the jam sessions, because I turn jams into gigs for me. It's like I play so well. It's like, okay, can we just pay him for just doing such an awesome job? It's like, okay, even if it's gas money, it becomes a gig.
Right.
So from there, I mean, I kind of treat jams as like temp as a like a temp center. Like maybe I showcase my abilities, someone picks me up. And it's happened so many times. I will at least say 80-90% times I go to a jam session, even though I'm lugging a big vibraphone, it tends to pay off for me. So I got my big, I guess one of my big breaks at Lakeshore Cafe, which was in Hyde Park. I was part of a group called JJ and the Jazz Masters. So I was playing there every week, every Friday. We had special guest artists coming in like every other week. We had Victor Goins, who was out of Wynton Marsalis' Guild, out of Jazz and Lincoln Center. Keith David, the actor, he came in. He sang a tune or two. And let's see, George Freeman, a lot of others. And then I expanded out to Indiana. First, I did Paul Henry's Art Gallery. That's how I knew, you know, all the venues. I linked up with a lot of people. And then I learned about Reginelle with Andy Sutton and his group. And then he had a lot of jazz artists like Joe Marcinek. Billy Foster came in. That's how we met. And it, for me, it just took off from there. I just started. Sometimes I would come to a jam session and play. Sometimes I would get calls just to come to a venue and showcase my abilities. Either way, I always try and, you know, do my best and showcase my abilities the best I can. And some strange reason, it seems to pay off.
So do you have a band or an ensemble that's sort of a steady for you?
Yes, I actually have a couple of groups, you know, one that I'm a leader of and one that I helped found. So one of my main little combos, the Soiree Nights. So just, you know, myself, usually it's a trio of myself, a bass player and a drummer. Sometimes I may have a guitar player or a keyboardist. And then, you know, we may play, you know, a nice private or corporate venues. And or other times we'll be at the local Mariano's around the Illinois area. And then another group that I helped found called TGX. One of the co-founders, a good friend of mine, Russell Grady, an excellent drummer. And that showcases a lot of jazz, R&B, and, you know, a lot of vocalists. So I'm kind of going into either jazz stuff, doing either Milt Jackson or Lionel Hampton stuff, or we're going to R&B where we're doing Roy Ayers and then following along with all those singers, you know, who are doing Stevie Wonder or Aretha Franklin and so on.
Well, we're going to get into our final minute here, Jacoby. Can you tell us about, and this will be like airing in mid-October, anything you've got coming up where people can see you and also how you can find you online, you know, social media and things like that?
Well, I am all on social media, Facebook. You just use my name or my stage name, Kobe Knight. So Facebook, Instagram. I'm also on Twitter, I guess. I'm rarely on it. And I have to do a better job of kind of posting my adventures but I'm so all over the place that sometimes I find it hard to just sit down, you know, type a few words or everything saying, here's what I'm doing, you know, join the party. In October, I guess one of my next performances will be with artist Timberlake Brown, organist. And that's part of the group B3 Diaries, and we'll be at in Gary at the 18th Street Brewery, and that's at 7 o'clock. So that'll be a nice one. It's just a trio: myself, artist on organ, and what's the name? Mike on drums. So.
Right. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Kobe Knight, otherwise the Kobe Berry, vibraphonist. And he appeared at IUN with Celebration of or Billy Foster in concert. So we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing your music and art journey.
Oh, thank you so much.
We'd like to thank our guest this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry are on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.